We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Great to be together. It is an awesome, awesome day. Some places are celebrating President's Day today. I don't know if that's everywhere, and certainly it's... I was always partial to Washington's birthday. I thought we should have stuck with that instead of making it President's Day, even though I, of course, like Lincoln a lot. And, you know, but once your President's Day, I don't know, you know, you've got to pick your president that you like. I think it was I think switching from Washington's birthday reminds me of all the tolerance movements that have culminated with the DEI stuff, you know, where everybody starts out with good intentions and ends up doing something that's more destructive than helpful. And they feel good about what they did, but they don't necessarily do enough good. So that's how I feel. And that's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. So that's my opinion. But anyway, if you celebrate President's Day, I know a bunch of kids had off of school. They like that. Some workers had off of work. They like that. And myself, again, in a few weeks, I got the email from the man who is in charge of the Monroe Foundation, the James Monroe Foundation. So in about, it's more like 2 months, April 28th maybe is Monroe's birthday. So in and around his birthday are a couple of commemorations, one down at Montpelier, his home, and the other down in Richmond at his grave. And I was invited. I'm invited every year. And so I get excited about that. I love that. I love celebrations of birthdays. Don't get me wrong. In fact, my son just had a birthday, turned 15 a few days ago, and we had a great time. So birthdays are good. I just don't know about President's Day. That seems a little silly to me. But all right, listen, what you need to know today, this is a very important one. I don't have as much of the meat to deliver to you, but I want to do the sizzle around it. Okay. So there is a man named Mike Benz, B-E-N-Z. And Mike Benz, if you go to his X feed, it's Mike Benz Cyber. So at Mike Benz Cyber. And he runs an organization. And so, well, first, let me tell you the backstory. About a year and a half ago, I think I had heard of Mike Benz. Maybe I'd heard him, seen him on X. I can't remember for sure, but I got a call from a friend of mine who I trust very much. I won't tell you his name because it doesn't matter for the story, but I trust him. He's an old friend. He's very smart. He's very interesting, thoughtful guy. And he said, hey, you need to connect with Mike Benz. And I said, really? Okay. If you tell me so, okay. And he gave me his number. And Mike Benz at that point was moving. And I forget now if he was moving from California or Florida, but I think he was moving to Texas. I might be getting it backwards. Maybe he's moving to Florida. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I mean, I all I know is that he was in his car moving from house to house, a long drive. And we had a great conversation. And we connected. And since then, 18 months ago, we send each other stuff to read. I watch him closely on social media, Mike Benz Cyber. He does these short videos. He's done about, I would think he's done about 10 of them. And they're very, very good. They're some of them are 6 minutes and some of them are 20 minutes, but none of them are an hour. And they're just, maybe one of them is an hour. He did one that was more sort of a researched one with a slide deck. But they're very, very good about understanding the censorship industry and understanding who's doing what in the censorship industry. Just very, very interesting work. And so at one point he was coming, I think, to D.C. And I said, hey, if you're in town, come by my office if you want a place to work out of. I've got internet, Wi-Fi. I think I joked and said I got Wi-Fi because he's a big cyber guy, but we didn't connect. So I don't think I've ever met him in person, but I've watched him. Well, Mike Benz last week did a 1 hour and 4 minute, I think that's their number, interview, a little bit over an hour with Tucker Carlson. And Tucker Carlson, if you watch the interview, Tucker is clearly blown away. He says it a couple times, but you can see it on his face. And even more telling for Tucker is Tucker usually doesn't tolerate a guest speaking for too long. Now, in the longer form interviews that Tucker does, he does have guests speak for a while. And, you know, he'll have somebody, you know, want on about something, and Tucker will let it go because it's a nicer format. But in general, Tucker still is a guy that does a radio, a TV show like his old show, where he lets somebody talk and interrupts them and says, hey, you know, what about this or what about that? And if you watch Tucker's interviews, many, many of them, you can close your eyes and think about them as like the interview would be 35 minutes. And actually think of them as if they are 5 7-minute segments, because Tucker will take up a topic, he'll talk about it, he'll interrupt, he'll ask another question, he'll follow on. Well, with Mike Benz, Tucker just sat there, and Mike Benz spoke for almost the entire time. Maybe Tucker asked 6 questions, 8 questions. Maybe the questions were a total of 5 minutes, could be a little bit more, but the brunt of this was Mike Benz speaking. So now what's the payoff here? What he explained was how the American system of promoting its interests overseas that had been so effective for 80 years, how that system, which included nonprofits that were set up in a place and that the control of the government in a place, influence of the government, direct influence, influence on the economies, and especially influence over the media. So he's talking about this, and he's referring to, often it's called the color revolutions, where American operatives and American interests go into a place and they help to establish or help to influence who ends up in the government. And they call it color revolution. And there's lots of examples. But what Mike Benz does, 2 things he does that are extraordinary, is in describing all of this in detail and describing the connections between them, he gets us to 2016. And he says 2 things happened in 2016. Number one, they turned the forces that they had developed on the American people. So last week, you might have seen Michael Schellenberger and Matt Taibbi had a story with one other author. I'm sorry, I forget his name. And the story was about how it looks like the John Brennan and others in the Obama administration asked our foreign nations to begin investigations on Americans so the CIA could then turn around and say, oh, they already have this intelligence. We've got to look at it. In other words, it was a bait and switch done intentionally. What Mike Benz says is, look, all the stuff we did abroad, we turned and did to the American people, the American government, the American citizenry, the American nation, the American system of government. And here's the second point that's so important. The internet is what was now the tool for the media control. So if in the old days, 1960, 1955, we were using Voice of America and we were broadcasting into the Soviet Union and we were telling the people there about freedom and we were influencing, you know, behind the Iron Curtain or going in places, we had to control the radio, the TV, and the print. And that was manageable. The internet became much less manageable. But what happened, and Mike Benz describes it in great detail, in the run-up to the 2020 election and to COVID, was that the people who developed these systems, these operating systems to influence how people live in foreign nations, turned it on the American people, and now they had focused on what had been previously sort of uncontrollable to them. They couldn't figure out what to do with the internet. And so in this case, in the 20 teens, they turned all those resources on the social media and the tech giants and all the online presence. And they created this disinformation movement and used the language of government and the color revolutions to claim the need to stop threats to democracy, to stop disinformation that was against the public good. So the threats to democracy were if you were against mail-in ballots. And that was what they needed because they were going to use mail-in ballots as a big part of how they'd figure out how to put Biden in. And if you were against vaccines, they were going to call that disinformation in large part because the control that was granted to allow them to do mail-in ballots. And also probably, again, there's partners in this, for-profit companies that are partners like pharma. Okay. So I'm not explaining it too well, although I'm doing a pretty good job. I have to say I thought about this a lot. But here's the message. Go and watch Mike Benz on Tucker Carlson. I think it's still free. If you go to X, the X platform, either go to Tucker's, Tucker Carlson at Tucker Carlson, his X, handle, or go to, as I said, Mike Benz Cyber, Mike, M-I-K-E, Benz, B-E-N-Z, Cyber, C-Y-B-E-R, and watch this 1 hour description. It's kind of a history of what's happened and a description of what went on in our immediate past and where we are now. And his, I'm sorry that I can't remember. It's not in front of me in my notes, and I'm off site as I record this, so I don't have it. But his website, you can go to his organization, which is basically him and now some other researchers that study cyber and make sure and tell you exactly what's happening with all this stuff. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. What you need to know is Mike Benz. Mike Benz will tell you what you need to know. So go, please, and watch that 1 hour and a few minutes interview, and you will be enlightened. Very important. All right. That's what you need to know. I'm Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Hey, we've got the chance to catch up with our friend Todd Benzman. Todd Benzman is all over the country right now. I think he's out west somewhere. He's been all over the world. His coverage in Poland got a lot of attention and of course, down on the border. Todd Benzman is the Senior National Security Fellow over at the Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org. He's great there. You can find his site and his writings. There's also lots of other people at the Center for Immigration Studies that do great work. It's a really an important organization that's at this moment maybe more valuable than ever, although they've been going for years. So welcome back, Todd. And first of all, before we go on to where we are today, it looks like the border deal that got so much attention is pretty much dead. I mean, I think everybody said it's over. But two things about that. One, what was it really that got it killed off ultimately? What was it that caught the attention or got the attention of the public or the lawmakers enough to stop it? And then what are your thoughts that the Republican Party would put that up? You know, a bunch of the senators would say this is good enough. So welcome back. And a few thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, first of all, Republicans in the House who are border hawks, who follow the border and have been doing the impeachment, and there's a lot of knowledge about the border and what causes this and how to stop it. There's actually a lot of institutional knowledge because of the impeachment investigation, et cetera. And those lawmakers understood from the get-go that what was being proposed over there was a ruse, that none of it actually would have stopped the border crisis. It would have incentivized more of it and codified it and made it harder for a future Republican president to put a stop to it because there'd be this legislation. And also they understood that the president already has the authority to put an immediate stop to this, to deport 100% of everybody crossing that border with no chance at asylum, which would immediately halt the border crisis in about 2 hours. So they just told Donald Trump about it, and Trump came out strongly against it. And once Trump came out strongly against it, the others had to kind of fall in line on it. That's what killed it.
That's interesting. And to pause for a second, Todd, what really happened here was that enough of the House members actually knew for a change what was going on and weren't snowed by, hey, you want the Ukrainian money or something else. But really, I mean, you're very clear on the timing and the cause and effect. It was Trump saying this is a bad deal that was enough to knock it back. I mean, I watched the media say Trump did X, and I just don't believe them ever. But that's an interesting and important, because from my standpoint, Trump has the best positions on this. One quick thing on when you say That border bill would have codified it. Let me see if I simplify it too much when I say the following. Ultimately, it was going to allow people coming in. In fact, it was going to require that they be allowed to come in some number. And no one was going to there was thrown around under that system. And the only stop of the stoppage of that was possibly down the line. Right.
Right. They were going to codify that it was OK to let 35,000 a week into the country, 5,000 a day. And then if, you know, the president thought that was too much or that we were being swamped, he would quote unquote close the border then. But
right.
There was never any language in the bill that described exactly what it was that he was going to have to do to close it, to close the border, or when. And so it was left open, just like it is now, for the president to just simply blow it all off and say, yeah, you know, we could take 5,000. All this money for extra personnel down there has given us the ability to take 8,000 a day. So we're fine, that sort of thing. And then they would have codified it that 5,000, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, but anything over 1,000, former CHS secretary said, was an overwhelming crisis.
Let me pick up there, actually. We're talking with Todd Bensman, and if you go to his website, toddbensman.com, you can see his books, both his books. The first one about a few years ago about national security and the border, but the most recent one is called Overrun from Post Hill Press. I think it's Post Hill. It might be Bombardier, which is a division of Post Hill. But and that book, Overrun, is about the Biden administration's decisions immediately after getting into power and how their policies have put us here. Very prescient and came out late last year or maybe September. But Todd, the Mayorkas, I was for the impeachment because you at least have to say that you're doing things to be accountable and then do them. And so they, in this case, okay, he's impeached. Everybody agrees, I think, that the Senate is not going to move on it. It's not going to go anywhere, but it made a difference. Who are the heroes in the House? Who are the actual I like to say their names, the House members who stood up and on the border bill as well as on this were out there clear from, you know, figuring it out. And who are those heroes?
Well, I mean, a lot of this was spearheaded by House Homeland Security Committee, Mark Green.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he really pushed this thing through, and then you had members of the Freedom Caucus who were, you know, pushing from behind him. They did a bang up job. The committee did a bang, and especially the staff did a great public service, creating investigative reports. A series of investigative reports that are on the House Homeland Security Committee's website that I would urge everybody to go read. So, I mean, a lot of this was done by staff. But remember that this thing was just barely passed. I mean, by the hair of your chinny chin chin did this thing even go through.
Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit, Todd. I know you're out on the road, so you're cutting out a little bit. I got the last of it. Let's see if you come back a bit. Let me ask you about where the issue is in terms of the Biden administration has at least changed its messaging, trying to blame Trump for this border deal going down and trying to sound a little bit more. They sound more opposed to the immigration crisis. They're not doing anything. We've known that for a year. We listened to Todd Bensman from the border a couple times where he's saying, look, people may be saying there's a crisis. Nothing's changing. The Biden administration has not changed. In fact, they're opening it wider. But the Democrats, I think, know it's a problem in terms of politics. And, you know, you've been at this a long, long time, years and years. Is the public really, is this the height of the public's paying attention to this?
Well, all of the polling is showing, and it consistently for the last 6 months, showing that the border crisis is a top-ranking apex issue for the 2024 national election. It is. The Biden administration knows this full well. There is a complexity to the border crisis that I believe the Biden administration is taking full advantage of, where people just don't understand how it all works or what really is happening down there, which is why I wrote the book.
Right.
Because people, if they put money, then they're more prone to accepting Democrat campaign arguments about it, like it's Trump's fault. Anybody who understands anything about this can just trace it directly to inauguration hour plus one, 2021.
Right.
It literally started within 1 hour.
Okay, well, Todd, let's stop right there. Well, let's take a quick break. I want to come back and keep going with you. It's such an important topic and so much information. That's Todd Bensman we're talking to, again, National Security Fellow over at the Center for Immigration Studies. He's at Bensman Todd on X, and his website is toddbensman.com. We'll take a quick break and be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We're completing our interview with Todd Bensman. Extraordinary. He's just back from Mexico, where he did some interviews. And let's keep going.
There's one other thing that I think even a lot of Republicans either don't want to admit to, or and nobody really knows that this is happening, that the Biden campaign is so fearful and fretful about this as a campaign issue that Biden himself went down to Mexico City just before Christmas, and he sent Mayorkas and Blinken down just after Christmas to meet with Mexican President Manuel Lopez Obrador to have them crack down on the immigration through their territory, and they have. They've absolutely gone medieval on illegal immigration in Mexico to the extent that I've never seen before. And the Mexicans have successfully dropped our border crossings from 12,000, 14,000 a day to 4,000 a day. And it's supposed to be an operation that will last through November, through the November elections, so that it drops the numbers to a threshold where the media loses interest and they go away. And that's what's happened down there. I just returned from Mexico. I interviewed a whole bunch of Mexican army soldiers and Mexican immigrants, Mexican immigrants in Mexico, NGOs, and everybody's talking about these really aggressive Mexican operations, their roundups, tens of thousands roundups, not getting covered in the U.S. media at all, except by me. And they're shipping them 1,500 miles to the southern part of the country by airplane and by bus, and it's forced. These are roundups, forced roundups, all along the Mexico's northern border, especially in Texas.
Todd Bensman is our guest, and at Bensman Todd on X, and toddbensman.com is his website. The book was overrun. Todd, you mentioned that this draconian focus of the Mexican government to slow things. You cut out actually when you said the actual. You said when you cut it down from 12 to 13,000 a day down to X, and then you cut out. I don't know, but my question is, where are X coming from if the Mexicans are cutting down, are cracking down on it?
Those are, yeah, it's dropped from 14,000 a day to 4,000 a day.
Okay.
5,000 a day. I mean, they've cut this by 80%. Most of the ones that you see coming and they're extra-continent, at least Iran, Afghanistan, from extra-continental nations, special interest nations, coming through from China, in California and Arizona. Texas is almost shut down. There's just a trickle coming through Texas because of what Biden is having the Mexicans do for his political campaign. Remember, when it's 10,000 a day, you've got international media down there. When it's 5,000 a day, they go away. And
right.
That is the goal of Biden's Mexico campaign. You won't read about this really very many places. The New York Times has acknowledged it. But nobody's really down there tying it to these diplomatic trips that happened at the end of December and early January, and they're still happening now. The Mexican foreign minister, you know, and all of his people are coming to D.C., and it's a lot of back and forth for the Mexican operation, and it looks
like that operation is...
Yeah.
Let me clarify, though. Again, we're talking Todd Benzman. If the Mexican government can round up 10,000 Latin American illegals and say you're not supposed to be here and ship them south, are they at the same time they end up with 3,000 or 4,000, 5,000 extra continental people that arrive and they're allowed to keep going? Why would they be allowed to keep going? I mean, what's the corruption factor here? I don't understand it.
I don't understand that part either, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
I think that the Mexicans, I suspect, and I don't have this, I plan to go down there and find out.
But, okay.
But right now, it appears as though if you're an extra-continental from certain countries the Mexicans can't readily deport them, and they're going to stack up, they're coming through the Darien Gap, the Mexicans are still letting them through.
I see.
They'll let them through on certain roads. This is all about road checkpoints. There are roadblocks all over Mexico now, where they filter them. They can filter them out by nationality if they want. So if they're Chinese and they're coming in on the bus, it's like, oh, they're Chinese. They can stay on the bus and keep going. That's what I think is going on. And then, of course, nothing changed in our policy. Everybody who reaches our border is immediately let into the country to stay permanently. So the pull factor is still there, but the Mexicans have knocked out the freight trains, which
yeah.
is key to all of those numbers. Now the Mexicans are occupying the rail yards and not letting anybody on those trains, and those who sneak onto the train somewhere else are getting rousted off of them before they can bring... And those trains are all emptying. They're all showing up empty now at the northern border compared
right.
to December and November. And this is all planned. You know, this is all part of a Biden administration plan to get that media attention somewhere else.
Todd Benzman is our guest. One last question is, when you say the Mexican government does that, is the Mexican government in control, or is it the cartels? In other words, is it in the cartels' interest? They don't want to let if they can't have the full freight of this thing, but maybe, I don't know. I'm totally guessing that they're not going to want to stop. But your explanation, that your guess, your thoughts on the explanation are probably better, that, you know, deporting someone to China is a pain, whereas deporting someone to Honduras, you know, takes only just a flight. So it's probably that. But it is. But anyway, are the cartels really in charge? They are, right?
Well, the cartels know when to retreat. They do strategic retreats this thing is such a big diplomatic deal. I mean, this is president on president kind of a thing.
Right.
There are good reports, credible Mexican media reports, that the Mexican Navy is actually up on our northern border. I didn't meet any of them. I was looking for them. And that's always a telltale sign, because the Mexican Navy is regarded as the least corrupted institution in Mexico, probably because they're off, you know, they're on ships and stuff, out, you know, out to sea. Yeah. But when the Mexican government really, really wants to enact change, they can overcome the cartels for periods of time.
I see.
And they do. And the cartels will strategically withdraw and go, wait, this is something really different and big. These are, because it's the Mexican army up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it's regular army. It's not even the National Guard. It's the army. And they're permanent. They've got these big mobile barracks that have been wheeled in that, you know, fit 20 at a time, and it's got Humvees, and they're doing roundups, and they're footing the bill to put them on planes.
The
cartels will benefit eventually from this, because they're this up their prices for the ones that have money down there.
All right.
Bring them in.
Right. All right. All right. Todd Bensman, thank you as always. Always a pleasure. Todd Bensman, he is the National Security Fellow over at the Center for Immigration Studies. He is the expert on this stuff, and it's so important. So thank you, Todd. Be safe, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment. We've got a whole lot more, so stay tuned.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, presenting a daily conservative pro-family perspective since 1983 and continuing the legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, from the Phyllis Schlafly Center Studios, Ed Martin.
Across the Western world, many citizens are rising up against globalism. Even many Canadians are finally fed up with globalism. The largest Ukrainian population outside of Russia is in Canada, where nearly 5% of its population, or 1.4 million people, are Ukrainian. The Conservative Party of Canada unanimously voted against a trade agreement with Ukraine in a humiliation of Canada's far-left Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who had signed the deal in expectation of full support. Instead of explaining why he thinks globalism is good for Canada, Trudeau lashed out at Donald Trump. In the United States Senate, where the pro-globalist senators of both parties control the agenda, a vote on sending many billions more to Ukraine is expected soon. New House Speaker Mike Johnson and other conservatives in the House deserve credit for not including this in their recent continuing resolution to fund our government. This leaves Democrats in a quandary as the presidential election heats up. President Biden is closely associated in voters' minds with an open southern border that has let in 10 million illegal aliens during his presidency. Democrats are suddenly hinting that they might agree to modest measures to close our open southern border. But that's just pre-election talk by Biden's team, as they see the handwriting on the wall for voters to turn against him for allowing so many illegals into our nation. Any tightening of our southern border in 2024 will just be reopened again if Biden or any Democrat were to win the next presidential election. It's not enough for Democrats to talk about closing a bit of the southern border, but instead need to take action to undo the massive amount of damage they have already caused by their open border policies. Texas Governor Greg Abbott recently endorsed Donald Trump for president, belatedly, as Trump visited the rampage by illegals over the Texas-Mexico border. Trump now has strong allies in Argentina, Italy, Greece, Hungary, and elsewhere, as his admirers have swept to victory on an anti-globalist platform that limits mass migration.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report with Ed Martin, president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. American citizenship should never be taken lightly. That's why you need to go to phyllisschlafly.com and be part of the dialogue on the need for border security and an accurate census, the travesty of sanctuary cities, and voting rights for illegals. Voice your opinion at phyllisschlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. By the way, please visit ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com. Sign up there for the daily email. Excuse me. Sign up there for my Substack. I write lengthier. In fact, I'm going to post a little bit later tonight. So you can sign up there. But also, I know this is two-step. You got to go over to PhyllisSchlafly.com and sign up there. Make sure you sign up for the daily email, the daily wink. You will get everything you need to know, what you need to know in an email, 8 o'clock East Coast time each morning and Monday through Friday. Please check it out. All right. Earlier on the Wink, the radio segment portion of the Wink, which is my first segment here, I did speak about how President's Day, I don't really get it. You know, President's Day, I mean, I like George Washington. I think we should celebrate George Washington's birthday. I think we should probably celebrate George Washington's birthday on his birthday, not on a Monday after a weekend. So many things get corrupted by the need to make it easy for school to have a 3-day weekend or work. I don't know. Anyway, but it's not even George Washington's birthday anymore. It's President's Day. So, but here's what I want to do. I want to raise a toast and highlight George Washington and the importance of studying his life. Now, first, I want to encourage you to study lives of successful people. Now, I know this sounds predictable, but there's a lot of really smart literature, research, anecdotal evidence about the fact that if you study successful people, it has a benefit on you directly. You may not even know it. One time years ago, a friend of mine asked me to join this kind of a club that you got a certain number of books. It was kind of a self-help initiative. That's the best way I can talk about it, but it focused a lot on reading. And there was lots of great books and really good books on organizational stuff and on understanding how things operate and all kinds of things. And some of them were biographies. But after that time, and I did get a couple of books out of there that I've never stopped reading and rereading. So I should say, and they're not the biographies. But after that reading, a very intensive program, I ended up then going on a spree of reading biographies. And to this day, I just love, if I hear somebody interesting that's historic or something that there's a biography of, I will go and I go to the library. I go online to my local library and I order a copy to be delivered. The way my county library works is they deliver it to the local library near me and I go pick it up. And I don't buy the books because I don't know if I'll enjoy it. I don't know if I want that. I just want to read about people that I hear about that are successful. And so the other thing I want to tell you is when books became popular, which is, you know, around the 1600s, they started to get really popular. The printing press became the Gutenberg printing press. And then the others that quickly developed was in the 1500s. But in the 1600s, as books became more popular and they existed in places, you could go to the library and see them. You know, you go to the church and see them, the copies of the scripture, more copies of the scripture available, copies of meditations on faith and religion. All these things became more popular. One of the popular types of books in that period, mostly late 1600s, I think is when the most popular version was lives of saints, the lives of saints, people describing the lives of famously holy people and the lives of saints. Butler's Lives of Saints was the most common. I think Butler was a priest in England. He wrote the Butler's Lives of Saints was wildly popular, really big seller, because you open up Butler's Lives of Saints, there's hundreds and hundreds of saints and they have short biographies. And you can read about, oh, so-and-so, you know, did this, this, and this, and came from this background, that background, ended up being a saint, either holy in some specific way. Sometimes they were famous, sometimes they weren't. And it was very cool. My point is, the lives are what works. You can read a lot about principles. You can read a lot about facts and the details and theories, all kinds of things around the one thing that's powerful is read about Einstein. You read all about, you have to read, if you care about that science, you got to read all about the science. But if you read about the person,
you learn an awful lot, and you learn about how they got there, how they succeeded. Einstein took a lot of naps, by the way. He was famously a workaholic, but he took a lot of naps, which I love the idea of. I mean, he was famous. He would take famous. His wife would tell stories. I think he would lie down on the couch and just take like a 30-minute nap, but boom, and he'd be out. Like out in the, and it, he was kind of a wild character because he was so smart and so successful. He would sometimes like just take a nap in front of people. Like they, he'd roll over on the couch if there was room and lay down and take a nap. Anyway, my point is that's a silly example. But more importantly, when you read about Washington, for example, you read about many aspects, including this one, which is, you know, it's important because he became such an iconic figure. But he failed over and over again as the general of the American army. He had defeat after defeat. He made a number of what historically, looking back, look like blunders. They will say, oh, that was a historical error. I'm not quite as confident to say that. But historians will say that. He made this error. You know, and military historians and military strategists will say, yeah, he made this error. But over and over again, he was a writer of letters. He wrote to Martha, his wife, a lot, but he wrote other letters. He was a writer. He kept some journals. So we know that, but his thinking. But he just kept after it. And you learn, and Washington's life was long and extraordinary. Now, he was a very wealthy guy, so he also had the ability to do things that nobody else could do at that time. But that doesn't mean not everybody would do that. He was just an extraordinary guy. He gave up, relinquished power when he could have stayed in power, you know, famously, instead of staying as president, he didn't want a king. One thing I love to read about in one of his biographies is he was an early investor in the canals. You needed canals next to the rivers because you needed the water to transport things. And so he was an investor and he picked poorly. He had bad investment ideas, but he knew that the canals were important. He could see that it had to happen. It had to be a project that people had to do. He believed in it for the developing economy. Anyway, George Washington on his birthday, celebrate his birthday and celebrate his life and study the lives of successful people to learn things they did and the ways they failed, the ways they succeeded. Many of them were, you know, terribly unhelpful and unhealthy people emotionally and with their families. You can learn from it. It's wonderful. So anyway, George Washington was an extraordinary man, a gift, providential that he was around at that time to lead this nation in the founding. So there you have it. Happy George Washington's birthday. And we've got to go. Thank you, as always, to Mason Mohan and to Ryan Height, our producers. Back tomorrow. Ed Martin, Pro America Report.